before we started recording, Henry, you sort of trailed us. So you said, oh, I'll say that when we were recording.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You've got something huge in the offing.
Well, it was too hot for... It's pretty hard for the audience to imagine this kind of thing, but there are some anecdotes which I subject you to, which aren't actually good enough to get onto the... It's hard to imagine that, isn't it? But there's genuinely stuff that I think of as not pod-worthy. A lot of people don't believe that, but there is, isn't there? There's non-pod-worthy stuff.
Acres of chaff.
And it really is only the creme
de la wheat.
It's the creme de la wheat, isn't it, that actually gets through. Well, no, I was going to say that... I think that every human being has a relationship with the glossy, sort of slime-filled orbs that are...
Our eyes.
No, nearly. So it's the glossy...
Frog spawn?
No, nearly. Thin carapaced, slime-filled orbs that are anally projected by our feathered friends... Chickens and hens.
Well, let's stop you there, Henry, because let's remember that chickens and hens don't have an anus. So for them to project something through an anus would be a miracle.
Yes, it would be, wouldn't it? It'd be extraordinary. Well, because they actually, have they got cloacas?
They're cloacid animals.
They got cloacid.
Welcome to the Cloaca Zone.
And also, of course, hens don't actually project the eggs, do they? They simply buff and maintain them.
They do still project them.
Oh, no. Oh, so I meant cocks. So no, hens do project.
How are you differentiating between hens and chickens, then, Henry?
Well, if it was a Venn diagram...
Okay.
You've got two big circles. On the left, chickens. On the right, hens. Where they overlap... is hens. Okay. A chicken is a form of hen. It's just a form of hen.
A hen isn't necessarily a chicken.
It doesn't have to be.
According to your logic.
No, a chicken is a form of hen, but it's just a form which encompasses all hens, plus cocks.
No, it's not, though, because you can have like a pea hen.
Oh. Okay.
That's true. Is a hen just not a female bird? Of any kind.
Can you have a cassowary hen?
Seems like too soft a term to attach to the end of such a deadly creature.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes.
A cassowary mega bitch. Let's just be honest. Isn't it?
Cassowary dominatrix.
Yeah. I think the more I think I'm actually wrong that all female birds are hens. Maybe just sort of fowl?
As a collective term for birds?
What?
I don't know.
We're all at sea here.
We really are.
Completely, yeah.
Good strong start, though.
Very strong start. Great teaser into what I think is going to be an anecdote about an egg.
It really is. Two eggs, actually.
Ooh.
All happened was this morning, I scrambled eggs in a new way. That's what I've done today.
Oh, okay.
It made me think about the fact that I think our relationship with eggs and how we cook them and treat them just evolves over the whole life. A bit like an egg, actually, in a way. It develops and nurtures, doesn't it? And finally, on your deathbed, it hatches.
So it hatches. So the chick hatches when the egg dies. Is that what you're saying?
in a way. Well, this is more of a conceptual egg.
Okay.
But I just think it's a life's work. I would say, like, mastering three different things: the scrambled egg, the boiled egg, the poached egg,
and how to love another human truly.
Yeah, how to love another human and sort of mastering
the saxophone.
Mastering sax. Which some would say mastering the sax and loving another human, is there actually a difference? Because when you think about it, a person is a kind of saxophone, isn't it? They've got an aperture around the mouth area.
A single reed.
They've got a single reed. They need to be well maintained. They like the touch of velvet. They're prone to fungal growths internally if they're not properly.
And a soft case will keep the rain off, but it won't protect it against hard knocks.
Exactly, Mike. So there's so many things in common. And also, if you learn the language of love, you can play a human being, can't you, like a sax, and make them wail.
Or mute them.
Or mute them. No, but so eggs, what I'm saying is that, I just think it's a life's journey. Like, and there are peaks and troughs, for example. There have been periods of my life where I've been really good at poaching eggs, for example. Periods of my life where I'm not so good at poaching eggs. periods of life where I sort of lose my touch for poaching a good egg. I mean, for example, a couple of days ago, I Googled how long do you need to poach an egg for. That's something I've looked up so many times in my life, I just completely forgot on it. It's passed out of my ken. Mm-hmm. There are periods in my life, often in one's life, often shortly after Christmas, where one is trying one of a series of contraptions that are designed to help poach an egg, all of which turn out to be bollocks.
Yeah, don't they? Right. Yeah. Do you know what? Yesterday, I watched a video of someone making scrambled eggs because I've got into a weird... I don't know what it is.
Idleness is what it is.
Yeah. It's a mixture of idleness and not having a proper job.
Okay.
With a bit of fecklessness in there as well, isn't there? There's a combination of factors.
I think it's a comfort-seeking behaviour that I've fallen into, which is that...
Also, it's also you've, it also suggests you've just passed your peak, possibly in the last fortnight. Isn't it? Because it's downturn stuff.
Yeah. Because back in the day, you used to relax with a bar brawl, didn't you?
Yeah.
Exactly. You'd have been out there mixing it.
I've really got into going on YouTube, tapping in the words Marco Pierre White and just seeing what happens.
Hoping for a scandal? Or just hoping for
no. For some reason, he's done a series of videos which are very, very comforting and very calming. He speaks very quietly and very slowly, and makes some eggs or whatever.
It might be time for you to make a new jingle, because I'm about to declare Chat Snap,
which is
that's my chat. We've snapped chat. It's snap. I win. That's my chat, and I'm now taking command of it.
Hang on, Henry, when you talk to someone and they also begin to talk about the same topic, that's called having a conversation. That's not snap. That's not
double Snapchat. Actually, I'm talking about that as well. So you're in all kinds of trouble here, mate. Don't know how you're going to get this back. Double Snapchat. I've just read Snapchat already exists, doesn't it? It's quite a successful app.
Yeah.
Ben, do you mind if I just quickly tag on to your... Because this did start...
Tag on or bulldoze over?
Well, remember, it's something sort of similar. It's sort of a combination of the two, because I did actually remember the mother chat is mine here. I started this. So that you are a subset of... This is a subset of what I was saying.
He's a sort of little bird pecking ticks off your back.
I wouldn't say it's symbiotic, because I don't think I'm gaining from it. I'd say it's more, it's a non-fatal parasitism at this point.
Is that how you see this podcast, though? Isn't it? Me and Mike are just sort of parasites.
We're chatworms.
Yeah, I did say non-fatal, though, Ben. So I don't think you'll kill the mother organism, necessarily. You'll degrade it over time. But also, you can remember, you are sporing healthily within, you know, the context of my digestive tract, effectively. You know, you've got your own little universe in there.
Digestive tract talk. Oh, yeah.
You don't necessarily even know that you're contained within my digestive tract.
Well, I do now. You've ripped the plaster off. Me and Mike have now realised what our existence is.
I shouldn't have said.
I thought I was the king of my domain. So sorry, what is the mother chat?
Well, I'd like, before you carry on too far, I'd like to point out that essentially everything I'm saying is actually the opposite, Ben, is a direct descendant of the fact that you got me into Marco Pierre White. Last night I watched a video where he scrambled eggs, and this morning I tried it.
Oh, okay,
so actually,
okay.
To you. You are in control of the chat. The organism has reversed. You've spored so heavily that you've flipped the digestive tract round. You've escaped out through the anus, and you've actually completely mastered the mother organism. You're now sort of in charge of my brain. You're driving me.
You're now the parasite.
Mm. You're sort of half swallowed at the moment. You're in Ben's maw.
Yeah,
we're steadily gulping you down.
It's an incredible sight.
I can see your legs twitching, but that's about it.
Yeah, I'm also completely inside out at this point, so it's not clear. It's an extraordinary sight.
Which is also how you scramble the eggs.
Strangely, it's come full circle. Anyway, so Ben, I'm going to hand the baton to you actually now, so carry on.
Just to explain to Mike, yesterday we had a conversation on the phone. I recommended watching Marco Pierre White videos on YouTube.
Again, suggesting that maybe I'm not super, super busy either. It's almost like, you know what I mean? Like, there's an element of... we were two like-minded souls, weren't we?
What prompted the call? I mean, because it doesn't sound like it was urgent. Whatever it was.
I know, we were talking about something else that was quite important.
Was it that you were watching a video about eggs, Henry, and you wanted to share it with someone, and you had a feeling you might get short shrift from me?
Mate, to be honest, the call, genuinely, the call, what the call was Ben was giving me pensions advice. That was how it started.
And for me, a quintessential part of my pensions advice is just don't worry about it and get the Marco Pierre White videos on.
Yeah. And that's enough for you to get your Omnibank commission, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, when you're in a pensions mindset, you know, like you think about all the kind of advertising that goes with pensions. It's a silver-haired man. Generally, he's like he's got a garage. He's got sort of quite a good-looking son.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe an old car, like a classic car or a motorbike.
They're doing a strong, powerful hug. The quality to the light, because it is sunset. Because oh, yes. Make no mistake, what we're talking about.
Yeah,
it's sunset. But there's a kind of golden hue to the sunset. It's a kind of sunset it's got a kind of a bit of a kind of Beach Boys kind of golden California. You know, yeah. There's hope in it, and
the sun is actually a Viagra.
Well, that's the next ad, and they know because you're being sort of tenderized and prepared, aren't you, for the very, very heavy Viagra based marketing that's being through all your social media channels over the rest of your life. And there's also an extremely heteronormative family scene, I would say, isn't it? Everything's extremely heteronormative.
Yeah.
So you'll be there. You'll be sort of strong hugging your powerful son. He'll have a wife that looks a bit like your wife, weirdly, and she'll be breastfeeding. She'll be breastfeeding
a piglet,
a pure breed piglet.
And then outside the window, you can see hovering in the sky. It's that sexy Scottish widow's woman in a robe
on a Lloyd's horse,
on the Lloyd's horse.
On a winged Lloyd's horse.
Yeah, and that's sort of galloping, isn't it? But it's not moving forward. It's just galloping, sort of galloping on the spot, isn't it, in front of...
All of this is happening on a cruise ship as well.
Oh, wait, it pulls back at the end. Yeah. You're on a cruise ship.
Yeah. And Rob Brydon's there.
But that's right. So your daughter-in-law, just to recap, is breastfeeding the piglet, which is being tenderized and marinated by your grandmother.
From beyond the grave.
She's reaching from beyond the grave.
Yeah, which is how good her funeral plan was.
Yeah.
That it covered that.
And she's going, even though I died, I got this free pen.
And once a year, I'm actually reanimated and I'm able to tenderise meat and marinate meat.
Provided it's being breastfed by a non-blood relative.
And that's the Omnibank guarantee.
It's that or the carriage clock, isn't it?
Oh, God. Yeah, so that mood that is created by those ads.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, the other thing which goes along with that mood is that somehow they're managing to suggest, or of course, if you don't sign up with us, and then it's just all of your family just desiccated corpses being blown around a car park, aren't they? Everyone's just... Yeah.
It's actually based on that scene in Terminator 2 when the nuclear weapon goes off, isn't it? And everyone's skin explodes.
That's exactly it. That's your bloodline is a series of corpses that continue reproducing those so that your great-grandchildren, your grandchildren's grandchildren will all be just desiccated corpses flopping around, bits of bone sticking through the skin. No one's breastfeeding anyone.
And they can't leave the car park, can they? They can't leave the car park.
And the piglet is actually, according to the posters around the car park, is actually now president. Isn't it? Because you're leaving in a sort of piglet dystopia that's been created because of how poor your planning was.
But president of a nation that is just a sort of sheet of molten glass.
That's all it is. It's so unwelcoming. Mm. Yeah, so the mood in those pension ads is quite similar to a Marco Pierre White video, isn't it? It's very, very calming. Because, Ben, you put me onto these yesterday after you gave me the pension advice.
Yeah.
You put me onto these vids. So in bed last night, I watched the scrambled eggs one. And I thought I knew how to scramble eggs.
Well, his scrambled eggs are an odd, aren't they? They're very snotty and liquidy and don't look great.
So I did make them this morning. So the thing that he emphasises in his scrambled eggs...
Is it don't touch them, don't move them?
Well, no, you do.
Okay.
You don't whisk them in any way initially. Okay. You put them into the pan with some butter. And the pan is on incredibly low heat. And what you do is you then prick the yolks with a fork. Oh. And then you kind of swirl them, creating ribbons, is the word he uses. And the whole thing is incredibly slow, a bit like the way you should invest in a pension, isn't it? Which is it's slow, you drip, drip, and it takes its time, but hopefully the benefits arrive. So what he does is he keeps on saying,
And you've got to do this incredibly slowly. Don't hurry eggs. Don't. He says this, which I thought was quite a weird statement. He said, eggs are one of the most natural things in the world.
They're the apples of chickens.
What could be more natural than a human eating the reproductive vestibule of a bird?
Well, it's a potential, it's a stymied potential.
A pre-beast.
No, but it's a pre-beast's nutrition system.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a kind of escape pod, isn't it? That sometimes there's something in.
What, from the spaceship that is a hen?
Yeah.
I suppose it is. The only thing that's different is that hens don't have a voice that goes, launching in 5, 4, 3, 2. But maybe they should.
Well, maybe that's their internal monologue.
That might be going on inside, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So anyway, so he says, it's all about, he just keeps on emphasizing this, don't hurry, nothing good happens in a hurry. Take your time.
So that's what I was doing this morning, which automatically makes it a bit difficult because it's a breakfast food, isn't it? So it's kind of a point in the day where time might be important. But the other thing he says is, so the way you make sure that the pan isn't too hot.
Just press your face into the pan.
Press your face into the pan. And he goes, and make sure that your face can tolerate the heat of the pan. And if you're smelling meat, then just hold your nerve.
And incorporate it.
Incorporate it.
Into the scramble.
Into the scramble. Because a person's face is one of the most natural things in the world.
No, see, he genuinely says, put your hand against the pan.
Does he?
And again, do you remember this? He says it over and over again. So you cup your hand around the edge of the pan. He goes, and if your hand can tolerate the heat of the pan.
But he has a chef's hand.
He does have a calloused chef's hand.
You have an illustrator's hand.
I have an illustrator's hand. It's one of the softest meats, isn't it? It's one of the softest meats there is. It's an absolute oligarch starter, isn't it? His illustrator's hand.
He's got proper mutton paws.
He's got, yeah,
calloused,
you're right.
And scarred from years of tiny burns.
Yes, that have just built
searings.
Up. Yeah, yeah. That's a very good point. Yeah, so I learned that this morning when I hurt my hand.
Yeah.
But do you not agree that the ones he made in the video, and I guess the ones you made, if you did them in the same way, they're so wet and kind of gooey.
Yeah.
They just looked absolutely gross.
He does actually say that weirdly at the end, because the whole thing is like a mantra of like, this is the way to do it. Take your time, relax. It's nice and slow, nice and slow. And then at the end he goes...
Does he say at any point, my favourite thing he says in quite a lot of his videos is, approach the stove like a piano. You're playing the stove.
No, does he actually say that?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Mike, you've got to watch them. Basically, it's like a mixture of cooking advice and then sort of slightly strange cod philosophy about the world and how that might relate to cooking.
It is. I've only watched one. It is really good. It's very soothing. But then it's funny, at the end of this one, though, he goes, having told you this is the only way to do it, at the end he goes, but of course, these eggs, they do come out quite wet, which some people don't like. He literally says that at the end. But it's quite, one thing I like about it is his system is it removes... mixing them up in a bowl. I love anything that takes away a layer of effort. Mm. You know, you're going straight into the pan. That for me, that just goes tick, tick. That's
and
happening.
It sounds like it also removes the impulse to finally sort yourself out with a pension.
I've completely forgotten about that issue as well. That's the genius of Ben's plan. I'm still moving the money into his account. We just haven't sorted out the bit where he pays it back to me when I'm 70. So
I've given you a bigger gift than any money
it's
could
true,
ever.
It's true. You can't put value on it. Also, how many? What do I need my annual, sort of income to be when I'm that old? All I need is enough to pay for broadband or just to watch those vids. Do you know what I mean? That'll be my only expense. I mean, my main expense will be watching the Mark API White vids.
Great.
But it was a pretty good scramble. It was a pretty good scramble. It was a little bit, maybe a little bit wet.
Okay, let's turn on the bean machine.
You betcha.
Or more accurately, let's activate the bean machine. It's always on. It has to constantly run at a low level. It's humming
That's
away,
true.
Throbbing.
Because weirdly, the whole thing is actually powered by an electric toothbrush charger, isn't it? Which people often find surprising. Because
But we were warned that once it was switched on in the first place, it could never be powered down.
It could never be powered down. Mm. Well, actually, I think the phrase actually was actually more blood-curdling than that. It was, it must never be powered down. The future of the northern hemisphere of the planet depends on it. Southern Hemisphere should be fine, actually.
That's why a lot of billionaires are buying up sort of real estate in places like New Zealand, isn't it? And just on the off chance that the
Yeah.
The toothbrush battery fails.
Yes. Yeah, because, well, is it that they think the top side of the Earth would actually just sort of, yeah, would sort of
slough off, I think.
It would just slough straight off, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Tumbling into the sun, mm-hmm. the centre of our galaxy.
Quickly sear it on both sides to seal in the flavour.
That's right.
Just to catch the bollock, the sun is not the centre of our galaxy.
Well, that depends what you've been reading. Okay. We've been doing our research, Ben. Okay. Maybe it's time you did yours.
So what do you think the centre of our galaxy is, Ben?
I don't know if there is a centre of the galaxy, is there?
Newport.
Newport, South Wales.
It's clearly Newport.
It's the Iceland in Newport.
It's specifically the pre-cooked gravy aisle. So it's your meltable gravy cubes.
Yep, melts in your pocket.
You just walk it home, is it? The promise is walk it home, and by the time you get home, it's piping hot gravy, isn't it? But it starts off as a sort of cold cube, gradually slows down, just absorbs your body heat. And it's able to do that because it's the centre of the galaxy. Isn't it? That's why we think that can work. So I'm genuinely interested, Ben. You don't think our galaxy has a centre?
It's definitely not the sun.
So if you think of the galaxy as an Italian town...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It needs to have a little central square with some nice cafes and stuff, doesn't it? And then everything else is built around that.
Yeah. Tourist spot, yeah.
Yeah, nice little tourist spot.
So we're kind of like the police station next to the grubby industrial estate.
Which hopefully you don't end up on holiday.
Yeah, it's not even the main police station.
No.
Yeah, it's the one with the vice squad.
Yeah. And it's corrupt as hell. Yeah. Genuinely, though, what do you mean when you're saying... So because in my understanding is our galaxy is the Milky Way, in the middle of it there's the sun, and various planets go around.
Ah, you don't know the difference between a galaxy and a solar system. That's what's happening.
Is the solar system within a galaxy?
Yeah, so the galaxy is made up of, like, thousands of solar systems.
Ah, okay. But I think generally everything is based in the universe around, like, a rotating around a central sphere, isn't it, generally? That's the sort of model for it. You know, in terms of town planning, it's not strip communities, it's central square, it's the
it's
Italian hub.
Blocks,
it's not blocks. It's your market square, isn't it? It's central thing and everything kind of rotates around that, whatever.
It's Bologna rather than Chicago.
Yeah.
Lovely, yes. Nicely done, thank
you. And for that reason, like a lot of towns which are old market towns, but, you know, in modern times now have to have a one-way system for it to actually work. And that's why most planets tend to rotate in the same direction, don't they? Okay. which is clockwise at the moment.
What, until they're fully wound?
Until they're fully wound?
Then it's spring all the way back.
It's going to be super fast. It's going to be, well, it's going to be, and the other way.
Whip round.
It's going to be,
hold on to its hunches.
It's going to be super fast. It's going to be the other way round. So instead of night following day, day will follow night for us, but incredibly fast. So good luck making a fucking Marco Pierre White scrambled eggs in that universe.
But also, we'll be going back in time rapidly, right?
We'll be back in time super, super rapidly.
Yeah, you can unscramble eggs at that point for the first time.
Yeah.
It'll be quite exciting.
Which means actually watching the film Benjamin Button will actually weirdly make a lot more sense than it does now.
Oh, that's it. Ow! Snap!
Whoa! Yeah. Psh, ow!
So essentially, you're watching the film Benjamin Button like without the sort of gimmick. So you're just watching a movie about a man growing old.
But all other films will be quite hard to follow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except Memento as well will be more straightforward, I suppose, in a way.
That's true. Sound of Music, probably not worth your time.
Well...
Ooh, raw nerve.
I really like the Sound of Music, that's all. So just tread carefully.
Would that become a film about them welcoming the Nazis?
It would be a film about them sort of, as the Nazis are growing in power, moving from Switzerland into the heart, into Austria, isn't it? Moving from neutral Switzerland into the kind of palms of the...
Joining a nunnery. Oh, maybe that is okay.
Getting a bit disheartened by living with a bunch of slightly annoying...
Just bowing out of the geopolitical happenings.
No, they're bowing in.
Joining a nunnery?
But doesn't she join a nunnery in the film? No, she's from a nunnery.
She leaves a nunnery, doesn't she, at the beginning?
Maybe I'm thinking of Sister Act.
Uh-oh.
Can we do a thing where we slow fade on that track? Just slow fade it out. And then me come in going, enough from those tossers. Let's go on with the show. That'll add it up quite nice.
We might use that quite a lot going through.
We'll have to go through the whole back catalogue
to remaster
it.
Come on then, Bean machine, let's do it.
Okay, if you want to put something into the Bean Machine, simply go to enterthebeanmachine.boats. And Andrew from Leeds did that very thing.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
And the topic he put in is adverts.
Well, we've been talking about ads already, haven't we? It's funny when that happens.
What ads have we been talking about?
We were talking about pension ads a minute ago.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I don't really see as many television adverts as I did in the Golden Age because I tend to, like most people, I think, watch a lot of streaming stuff. Yes. There's no ads.
Which is tough on the old, the sort of John Lewis types, isn't it? The event advert.
Oh, yes. They've still managed to keep that going as an event advert, but it feels like it's slightly losing its steam, doesn't it?
I don't think I could tell you what happened in the last one.
Oh, good point.
This is the big Christmas adverts. Is this a sort of worldwide thing in sort of religious festivals and holidays? Do other nations do this?
Yeah, just to explain, there is a department store in Britain called John Lewis, and their saying is never knowingly undersold, which I've never understood.
I do understand it.
But can you communicate? Can you communicate to people of lower intelligence?
So John Lewis makes the promise, never knowingly undersold. Now, what that means...
By the way, they're bringing back.
Are they?
So they got rid of it and they said they're bringing it back. And yes. I still was like, but I never knew what it meant and I still didn't know what it means.
Put it this way. The knowingly is doing a lot of bloody work in that sentence, I think.
I still don't understand it, though. I mean,
No, that's great. I appreciate you being cynical about it, but I don't know what you're being cynical about.
Well, that's the thing. So here's the thing. What it means is, for example, if you go into John Lewis and there's an oven for sale, I don't know if that's even possible. Can you buy an oven?
Yeah, probably. Reckon, yeah.
Aren't they just always installed?
It is possible to buy an oven.
You can buy an oven, right? You can buy an oven. So...
there isn't this like a set number of ovens in the world that bring us all into buildings.
Houses and flats have to be built around.
We found more ovens.
If you're lucky enough to find an oven seam.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to give you a real example, which actually, in terms of Venn diagrams, this is an anecdote that's to do with John Lewis, but it also overlaps into an anecdote about me losing things.
An oven?
No, not an oven, but I've lost...
But you're up to it. If anyone's up to it, it's you, isn't it?
So I have lost a lot of things in my life. I've got slightly better, but mainly because I've lost all my stuff. So I don't really have as much stuff anymore to lose. But one of the things I'm... You know, you shouldn't be proud of this kind of thing, but there's a kind of perverse pride, which I have actually... I did once lose a radiator. Which I think is quite unusual. it was a radiator that I bought in John Lewis and then left on the tube. It was a big bulk, it was a heavy mother as well. It was an oil, it was a lovely, lovely thing. It would have kept me really warm that winter.
Oh, the bomb squad must have had to spend hours dealing with that.
Millions of taxpayers' money.
Yeah. Millions upon millions.
As they floated it out on hot air balloons into the sea.
Yeah. We're going to have to sacrifice the future of Britain's having any hope of mastering and being at the forefront of AI. We're going to have to put our best AI robot on the case. We're going to have to sacrifice it for this. We're going to set back our economy by a decade.
Cyber Steve.
Cyber Steve, I'm sorry. We have a big future plan for you, but it's now changed to you're going to get in a small boat with this radiator. You're going to row it out into the middle of the North Sea and then we're going to blow you up.
But I've just learned love.
But I have so much to offer.
I've invented a new way of scrambling eggs. I understand the concept of never knowingly undersold.
Doesn't matter, Steve. In fact, Cyber Steve, I'm actually unscrewing your face so that I don't identify with you as much anymore. So this is going to be easier for all of us if I just unscrew your face. It's coming off. And we're going to replace it with a drawing of a koala's ass I've just done. It's going to make it easier for all of us. Everyone on the team. Point being, I once left a radiator on the tube. But I bought it from John Lewis. So when I was buying that radiator, what it means is that John Lewis didn't know if there was a cheaper one around at the time of selling.
They will never knowingly sell you something.
So what it means is, in theory, I could go to another shop.
So it's like, we're cheaper than all of our competitors, but we're not going to check.
No. What it means is, if it's by accident, then, you know, hold the hands up. It's almost like saying, I've never knowingly murdered anyone. And expecting people to think you're a great guy for saying that. No, what it means is, if I'd gone to another shop, for example, a Curry's, bought the same radiator, taken that radiator to John Lewis, shown them the radiator and the receipt, and if it was for less than what they had were charging, they would say, yep, right, you are. Thanks for pointing it out.
So then they're saying that they have undersold you instead of overcharged. Isn't that the word?
Yeah, the undersold bit is the bit I don't understand.
I think the problem is that undersold isn't a word.
No, what they're saying is that if Curry's are providing that radiator at the lower price, I don't know if it means they'll pay the difference or they'll lower their price to match the Curry's radiator, if you see what I mean.
But what does the word undersold mean?
That means someone else selling the same thing cheaper.
Never knowingly overcharging you.
I would just call it the John Lewis price guarantee.
Has it just been that at some point a couple of ad execs have gone, we can't call it the price guarantee. Everyone says that. It's really boring. Don't worry, I've invented a word, undersold, and they've presented it to the committee. And the committee has been so embarrassed that none of them know what it means that they've just waved it through.
I think I still would have gone with the John Lewis price promise.
We've got crazy bargains. The washing machines are practically walking out of the shops themselves and inserting them into your home themselves for free. ow. Our boss must be barking mad with the price of these mops. Yeah. Ben, have I told you about the time where the service is so good in John Lewis? I once went in there, was browsing toasters. I was looking for a toaster.
And left with a radiator.
Left with a radiator.
That's how good it is.
And got home with that without either. And when I was in there, I got chatting to, because the staff are very, they're very Marco Pierre White. They're just very soothing and everything feels okay in that world. They help you to make the best purchase for you. And I don't know, just you feel really comfortable there. And basically someone spotted that, or it came up in conversation with me and the person there, that a button was loose on my naval-style peacoat. Yeah, that I was wearing at the time, navy blue. You know, the buttons with the anchors on?
Yeah. I've seen that coat.
Nice look. And while I was browsing for toasters, they whisked my coat up to haberdashery and put a new button on and whisked it down for me. But just in time for me to say, I'm not going to buy a toaster today, thanks. But I will take my peacoat back, thank you.
By which time the lining of the jacket was replete with tiny microphones, video cameras.
That's right.
And tracking devices.
We think this was the man who left that huge pipe bomb on the tube.
One of the most audacious attempts.
One of the most poorly concealed bombs.
Poorly concealed, obvious bomb. Even a different settings on it. You could turn up to, how hot the bomb was at 0-9. Enough from those tossers. Let's go on with the show. The other thing that's confusing about its advert, just to keep us on theme, of never knowingly undersold, is that it's sort of trying to say that it's good value, but at the same time it is just known to be and is quite an expensive shop. Like, everything in there is quite expensive.
Yes.
But it's just expensive stuff, I guess, that they stock.
Yeah.
But what it is, it's got this place in the national imagination which is a bit like M&S, which is, it's sort of like, it's there for you. Like, it's where you'd go for something like mothballs. Do you know what I mean? Like, or like a button or something. Like it's kind of household solutions as well. It's got a kind of, it almost feels like it's part shop and part a kind of government.
It feels institutional in some way.
It's an institution. There's, I mean, in Exeter we have a John Lewis, and it's literally the biggest building in the city. It dwarfs the cathedral.
Wow.
you can pretty much see it from anywhere within the city limits.
Who is the current Bishop of John Lewis?
It's Reginald Featherbed.
Anyway, advertising-wise, every Christmas, the British listeners will know this, they, for the past sort of probably 15 or 20 years, have decided or sort of gone, we're going to make an iconic advert every Christmas.
And it did like maybe the equivalent is the Super Bowl thing. The arms race to have the... But I think Super Bowl ads are supposed to be sort of glitzy and spectacular and funny, right?
Yes.
Whereas your Christmas ad has to be a tearjerker.
Heart-rending.
Yeah.
And so what was the first one that really launched them?
That's a good question. Well, a key component of these is they get a famous song.
Oh, yeah.
They get a young female vocalist to cover it.
To do a kind of breathy acoustic version.
Yeah.
That became a kind of real trope that started to irritate me quite a lot in the world of music.
Yeah.
And it would always be like, Twisted Firestarter, I'm a Twisted Firestarter. But the more anti the mood of the song.
They're quite dark. There's a lot of early evening people cuddled up in warm clothes and candlelight, that kind of thing. Yeah. The lighting's all very soft.
And then often there's a sort of CGI penguin involved or a snowman.
There'll be a CGI penguin. Mm-hmm. There'll be a child showing kindness quite often.
Yes. Maybe the first one was the one where the kid was getting ready for Christmas and then it turned out that the thing they were worried about was that the present they were going to give their parents and not the present they were going to receive.
Yeah, which is just a lie and just not true.
It's a wild fantasy.
It's a wild, wild fantasy. If you were cynical, you could argue that it's dressing up the biggest consumer hit moment, you know, of the year for those shops.
Yeah.
By getting you in your emotions.
But it is accepted, even though it's a nation that has a reputation as being quite buttoned up.
Yes.
People don't seem to find it too mawkish.
They're quite tastefully done, though, the John Lewis ads. They have been quite good. There's been a couple of, not exactly missteps, but a few. I remember there was a weird one where the kid was given a telescope.
Oh, the pedo on the moon.
Looked on the moon where there was a sex offender.
An exiled sex offender.
An exiled sex offender had been sent to the moon. which was a big idea in policy circles at the time, wasn't it? It was an idea that was being talked about.
That was the way they focus grouped it.
That was
put it in the John Lewis ad, see how it goes down.
Yeah, it had a slightly creepy, bizarre...
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bad one. It felt creepy and weird.
There was like an old man on the moon and she was looking through a telescope and it felt like...
A child-adult relationship that hadn't been sanctioned by the parental unit.
Exactly.
Well, that was it, yes.
Yeah.
She had a special friendship with an old man. It felt weird. Stranger danger.
Stranger danger knows no distance. Stay safe, kids.
Even the moon's too close. And remembering the one they did last year or the year before, there was quite a good one I thought was good. It was good. It was the guy learning skateboard. It was extremely good.
That one was very good.
That was good. I'm actually, right now, I'm struggling to talk about it. It was so emotional. It was so good.
Yeah.
Do you remember this one, Mike?
I'm not sure I do.
It was about fostering or adopting children.
Mm.
And basically, in the run-up to Christmas, this guy was learning to skateboard and he didn't know why.
But you don't know. It's a great reveal because you don't know why, do you?
And it turns out it's because they're fostering a kid.
Oh, it's so
And so
nice.
When the kid arrives, he goes, do you want to go skateboarding?
It's such a sweet moment. And of course, they cut it before what actually happened, which is you go fuck yourself. You're not my real dad. I'm smoking a bifter in the garden.
I'm smoking a bifter. I'm going to snap my fucking skateboard in half because you like it now. So I can't like it.
Yeah.
Get stuffed. Yeah.
Enough from those tossers. Let's go on with the show. I wonder if we can create a good John Lewis ad now together.
Well, my John Lewis ad is this. Mm-hmm. Ready?
Yeah.
Christmas is coming and it's time to buy, buy, buy. We've got toasters, $7.99. We've got fridges, $3.99. We've got Christmas pyjamas, $4.99.
These mops are $6.99. And if you buy 10 mops, they're $4.99.
Do you not miss that kind of advert? Because that's basically when we were kids, like in the 80s, that's what adverts were, right? It was like a celebrity walking up to, I don't know, a CD player and going, CD player is now $3.99.
Of Junction 8 on the M27.
Yeah.
It was very much, motorway junctions were important.
Yes.
A deadline was important.
Yes.
Only until April the 29th.
Carpet 74, $4.99. Everything was $9.99. Yeah. It's a way of saying a price that is never said in any other context.
Yeah.
You never go, how much is a pint near? $7.99. It's just not a way of saying a price, is it? Should we have another go at making an ad, a John Lewis ad? What do you reckon?
Okay. What are you trying to sell, though? Or do you start with the music? Where do you start?
You need some visual, some Christmas-based visual, ideally, right? Like a stocking, right? Because some of them have a journey of redemption, right?
Hmm.
A stocking-faced bank robber.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. He's just smoked a father of three in the back of a Nationwide because he needs to buy Christmas presents too.
So I think the first shot we get, Mike, in this, it's a Christmas tree shape we can make out on camera. As it comes into focus, we realise that it's a Christmas tree shaped hole in the body of the father. The camera is looking through that.
And the light of the strip lights of the bank glistening off the tears of the recently orphaned children.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Good. Okay, great start. Mm-hmm. So now the stocking face. So this guy, he's robbed a bank. He's got stocking on his head.
Yeah.
The dad was in the bank to withdraw money to make purchases.
Yep.
John Lewis. Were that clear? So the guy, he's got a Christmas stocking on his head, has he?
Well, that's where it's going. I think that's what it's going to become.
So at the moment, it's just a standard stocking, which also, by the way, you can purchase at John Lewis.
You can purchase. Yeah, yeah.
So what happens next? He's killed the dad.
Denier of your dreams.
Where do we want to end up? I think it's good to know.
Like, I think the perfect ending, but maybe I think that the main child, the larger of the three children.
Have they witnessed the execution of
their
father?
They've witnessed it. Their faces are spattered with blood, guts, bits of spine, and their own tears.
And some cranberry sauce, to be fair.
Well, that's the thing. That's what you want the audience home to be thinking about when they look at the blood, the mulch. They want to be thinking about cranberry sauce.
Yeah.
I think the ending, really, because we've had redemption before, right? So we think this is going to be about redemption of the bank robber. Actually, what it's going to be is the oldest child, the 10-year-old girl, she takes charge of the family. She presents the younger children. They have a stocking, after all. Yes, it's actually the stocking that was over the bank robber. What's the present at the bottom? It's the bank robber's severed head. The gift is of vengeance.
Very good. And what they can do is they can take the head and instantly cover it in a Waitrose glaze, because Waitrose is obviously linked to John Lewis. They can cover that in a nice Waitrose glaze, pop that in the oven.
Yeah.
Then cut to carving of the bank robber's head.
Yeah.
They all have a bit. One wants the red meat, which is probably sort of chin and jaw, sort of cheeks, isn't it? And the white meat's the brain.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of fun with that.
Got a bulbous nose. Yeah.
Got a bulbous nose that they use as a kind of wisdom. What's it called, that stick thing?
The wishbone.
There's a wish nose, because there's a lot of areas where you can have some fun. I think a nice way to end it, to make it a bit more funny.
Yeah.
Than something else, because it's feeling a little bit dark.
Oh, there's got to be a bit of humour in there.
Is the youngest kid does a little guff, and the sister, the orphaned elder sister, says, "What was that about?" And she goes, "Oh, it's just it's a classic Christmas
brain offal guff." Yeah,
there you go. Then you've got your little ending, haven't you?
Yeah, and throughout that whole process, the stocking hasn't laddered at
all. It hasn't laddered because
these are high quality purchases.
From the John Lewis shop.
Yeah.
And then does the children's mother come down the stairs and witness
good
what's
question.
Happened?
I've been wondering about her.
Yeah.
I'd imagined her already dead.
from a similar incident that happened at the previous Easter. You know what? As they're all tucking into the bank robber's head, you could maybe the camera, and if you have the guff jet, the camera could pan to the stuffed sort of effigied body of the mother that they've kept.
Mm. Oh, she's on top of the Christmas tree. They don't use a fairy.
They've lacquered their mother in using this sort of Soviet, you know, Lenin technology.
She's always looking over them and she approves. She strongly approves. It's all there, isn't it?
It's all there. And can I say, I know it's a little bit early, but happy Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Enough from those tossers. Let's go on with the show.
When I was a kid, I used to listen to the radio a lot. I still do, but... There's a lot of advert. I used to listen to commercial radio.
Wave 105.
There we go. Mine was Red Dragon FM.
Nice. We had Power FM as well, aren't we?
And those adverts are fantastic. And I can remember some of them so vividly. The best one being, there was a motorcycle shop in South Wales called Riders.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And the advert goes, "With the wind in your hair, the wind in your hair, Riders."
Nice.
Close to junction, blah, 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 blah. And then it would be
Quinn's, the bar that quenches any quirk of taste.
What's that?
That was for Quinn's.
What's Quinn's?
Quinn's, the bar that quenches any quirk of taste.
But that's like never knowing the end of the sword. What's that mean?
It's just a bar. It's just a bar. But it was in a place where there's quite good parking.
But what's a quirk of taste?
And basically the subtext is, if you're divorced and in your 50s, you still might get a shag. Isn't it? Because there's always a subtext.
Because they don't need to advertise to people in their 20s. They're going to a pub anyway.
Exactly.
So hang on. Any quirk of taste? So if you've got like unusual tastes in drinks, if you go anywhere, I want goat's blood, chilled goat's blood.
I think Henry's onto something. I mean, the implication, on the surface level, it's about quirks of drink taste, but they're saying there's bloody all sorts here and they're up for it.
It's basically incredibly dark in here, and the alcohol is incredibly strong. And it's too dark to see what we're putting in the glasses.
And it's just around the corner from a Holiday Inn.
Yeah, it's all perfectly set up.
There's no CCTV in the car park. So is that, would that play on Power FM?
Yeah, yeah. Power FM or Wave 105, yeah. All the locals.
Also, we do offer service where we can chemically castrate you. on the way in. You don't have to take it up, but it's an offer we make. Just means you can, because it gives you more peace of mind, doesn't it?
But we should remind you that herpes does remain incurable. And even a very strong Cinzano lemonade will not combat against that.
It's a shame that we still have to make this comment, or I still have to say this, but funneling Baileys up your anus makes absolutely no difference whatsoever.
But if it's for leisure purposes, that's fine, because this is Quinn's, the bar that quenches any quirk of taste. It might still exist.
It's Quinn's still there. Where would it have been? In Portsmouth?
Yeah, somewhere.
And remember, that's herpes, incurable, but thriving.
Thriving on Portsea Island today.
As far as I can tell, Mike, there is no evidence of Quinn's.
Oh.
I think the whole thing became so rancid with herpes, they had to just sort of seal it into a concrete bunker.
Like Chernobyl.
Yeah. You can actually pay for tours of it, though, now. You can go and visit, but you have to wear a hazmat suit and stuff. It's very expensive. Enough from those tossers. Let's go on with the show.
Time to read your emails. And instead of the usual email jingle, I'm going to play something sent in by Jerry.
Ooh.
Now, this is... I've listened to it. It's very good. It's kind of all of our jingles and theme tune mashed into one.
Mm-hmm. Blimey.
But it's mainly using a lot of the email jingle stuff, so I thought I'd play it here. So here we go.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on in that.
There really was.
Well done, Jerry.
You know when they send a bit of music or something in a podule out to space?
Yeah.
Yes.
In case aliens find it or whatever.
Yeah.
I think they should put that in the next one.
That's good. Well, the first one reminded me very much of like 80s ET type films, that first few bars. Felt like you'd be seeing a sort of suburban family scene, you know, waiting for the school bus just before it goes. And then it went into something that would be very good for the Christmas advert, I think.
It got very jazzy.
When it went jazzy, it made me think of like the kind of music that would be playing in the background in a spaceship in Doctor Who in the 70s, like in a bar scene or something in a spaceship.
Yeah.
But I think send it to space, put in the next podule.
And await destruction.
Await destruction, because I think it'll be good for the human race rather than to gradually, because it looks like we're going to peter out gradually. We're going to run out of natural resources. Temperatures are going to go up. Penguins will become either dead or in charge.
Or both.
One or the other. Obviously, the crabs will rise, but even the crabs will then fall. But we'll be living, any humans that are left alive will be living in caves eating cultivated mould. Actually, sometimes eating on non-cultivated mould. That's how bad it'll get.
Well, that's what would be the cause of wars, won't it? Between
the mould wars.
Between the remaining tribes.
Exactly, Ben, the mould wars.
Yeah.
There'll be World War I, World War II.
The Cold Mold War.
The Cold Mold War. And there were some great documentaries made about it. The world, the mold at war. And rather than that slow petering out, if that got sent to space, aliens listen to it, they go, they just thump, just squidge human, yeah. You know, squidge the planet in one go, yeah. And it's over.
Or just wrap us up in cling film and wait for everyone to, you know, fix it, whatever it is, however they choose to do it.
Yeah.
Thank you to everyone who sent us an email.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start with this from Ashley. Hi, Beans. I recently saw a clip of Ben on Richard Herring's podcast, and he's slightly taller than I'd imagined. Thanks, Ash.
Lovely stuff. Really nice.
I'm not enjoying this idea that the listenership in general feel that I am bald and short. That's what I'm giving off.
It's DeVito, isn't it? You're pictured as a UK DeVito.
Well, as the penguin, though, I think as well.
DeVito as the penguin. So it's, yeah, so it's evil DeVito. It's not likeable DeVito.
It's just the energy you give off, Ben.
It's just the energy. Nothing you can do about it.
Next email is from Michael.
Hello, Michael.
From North Carolina. I'm originally from King's Lynn in Norfolk, but have been here for over 20 years now, and your podcast is a key way of my strategy to expose my kids, brackets Marin 11 and Sander 8, to British culture. Great. They certainly appreciate your brand of lukewarm banter, so that's a win. They both love the idea of the provincial dads, and believe quite rightly that I am one.
Yes.
They know I like nothing more than thinking about efficient route planning. Mm-hmm. Which is why for my recent birthday, Marin made me this provincial dad activity book.
Oh, well done, Marin.
Ooh. This is so thoughtful. This child has understood the middle-aged provincial man beautifully.
So basically, it's a kind of route planning game.
Mm.
It's really good. It's hard to explain.
Objective. Get to the Thai restaurant. And you have a series of different routes you can go. There's green, there's red, there's yellow. You can plan it out. Different difficulty levels. This is absolutely outstanding, Michael. I mean, you're the richest man alive, Michael, frankly.
The 20% of the IP you still retain in this product, Michael, is... put it this way, it'll put a maximum of one of your children partially through college, won't it? It's sort of gamified Mike's life, hasn't it? That's what it's done.
Congratulations.
Go to the store.
And well done to Marin. I mean, that's just, that's superb work.
Evaluate traffic work. Light weights. Green equals good, no traffic weights.
It's a huge part of the population that this child has understood, has got to grips with there. I mean, I think this is a future leader we're dealing with here.
Henry, when you say that Michael retains 20% of the IP, are you saying that we retain 80% as progenitors of the provincial dad? Or are you saying Marin?
No. Sorry, that is us. Yeah. Marin, of course, is a minor. Unfortunately, legally, it's going to be a lifelong battle to get anything out of this.
See you in court.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Michael.
Thank you. No, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Hats off to the creator. Superb.
Thanks to everyone who signed up at our Patreon.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Patreon.com/threebeansalad. There are different tiers you can sign up for. You can get ad-free episodes. You get the monthly bonus episode. You get our film. I was about to say review, but more. I don't know if review is the right word.
It's pushing it, isn't it?
Yeah. Film discussion podcast.
An exploration of what cinema can achieve.
Film Corner. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge.
Not half.
Where Mike was last night.
I was indeed.
You had a visitor in the lounge last night, wasn't it? It was Hollywood actor Jack Black was there. Because it was the old Barrack Jack Black night.
It was. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report.
It was Barrack Jack Black night last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. Jack Black having been lured to the lounge by Sophie Berry, supposedly to discuss remaking Sharp's Revenge, with Sean Bean reprising his role as Sharp, and Jack Black playing his cowardly wise-cracking musket, Flinty. In fact, Sean Bean was hiding in the lounge sub-basement, playing pygmy hippo polo with Suzanne Hall, Andy Elliott Smith, Tory Queen of Chaos, Adam Klassens, and Lani Irving, and no such offer was on the table. Bridge and Sam Brooks led Jack Black to the Barracking Saloon, where Adel McGee and Colin D.H. Tucker had built a 47-foot-high gantry, atop which Jack Black was installed before Alastair Rice took the ladder away. Gareth Llewellyn then instructed Jack Black to give any speech or performance of his choice so the Barracking could begin. Jack Black bravely chose to do a one-man version of Ben Skinner and Banjo Dave's controversial rewrite of Starlight Express, in which the protagonists are funicular rather than standard trains. This over-enraged Jim Lane and Tom Foley Phillips, who are unable to barrack owing to an excess of oral fury frothing. Christine, Natalia A, and Paul James Wignall conducted a well-researched barrack based on a rumour that Jack Black's mother once worked as an engineer on an intercontinental ballistic missile project. Ben Podger attempted a rhyming barrack, but the only words he could think of to rhyme with Jack and Black were Black and Jack, and the barrack sounded more like an encouraging chant. Bryn Orton, Jan Frederick Poshwata, and Connor Jeffries attempted a barrack based on Jack Black's back catalogue, but all agreed there was something in the mix they'd admired and lost heart. This prompted Henry the Plonker to attempt a barrack using baseless smears, but he tripped over Oliver Stanley, causing the barrack to misfire, accidentally assassinating the character of Zoe Lear. Desperate now, Mark Wood tried a barrack inspired by Jack Black's choice of all-weather footwear, which led to an immediate and brutal barrack backlash from Malarco Tay, Jamie Spears, Tim Rastell and Adam Smout, who encircled Mark and barracked him into next Tuesday. David Fletcher and Justin Pietropaolo attempted to break up the internecine barrack, but, without weapons, only had barracking at their disposal, and the situation deteriorated. Thinking on, and perhaps with their feet, Alex McCabe, Daniel Groner and Alex Allsop began wrenching sections of gantry away to use as shields and discipline splinters to break up the melee. Sophie Sweet, Christine Han, Professor Julian Heppel and Tim Wu jumped on the bandwagon, even though none of them had been following events enough to understand what was going on. It was Pearl McCauley who first noticed the gantry was beginning to topple and who attempted to stabilise it by shoving Harry Kidd under a strut like a human napkin under a wobbly chair leg. But it was to no avail. Not least because Rob Dineen, Ollie Bolton and Sam Eardley were on the other side shoving the gantry with all their might. It is believed it was this which prompted the final collapse of the gantry, rather than Jamie Tullett yelling timber or Geordie Pawdy Pudding and Pie's unusual sneeze. At the time of writing, Isabel Dini, Vanda Otlinghaus and Alex Bailey remain trapped under the debris with Jack Black, who is keeping them occupied with a Q&A about his brief tenure on The X-Files. Liam Woodward tried to keep them all warm by setting the wood on fire, but thankfully this was blown out by Tom Vojenik, who got a birthday wish into the bargain. Thanks all.
Okay, we'll finish off with a version of the theme tune sent in by one of you.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Adam from Seattle.
Oh, thank you, Adam.
Thanks,
he writes,
Adam.
Attached is my contribution to the backlog of listener-submitted renditions of the Three Bean Sad theme. This jingle was written and recorded in the nebulous style of Twinkly's 1990s Midwestern emo, in the vein of groups like American Football and Mineral. I've heard of neither. It was recorded using three different guitars. A 2010 Fender Standard Telecaster in standard dual coil setup in Lake Placid Blue with a pickup swap to an EMG T-set.
Just play the guitar.
Very 90s. Very 90s.
A 2021 Fender Player Jaguar bass in tight all blue with a PJ pickup setup.
It's the last object of mine.
Combined with a warm, full sound of the precision bass pickup in the neck position with the scooped mid-range and bright treble of the jazz bass pickup in the bridge position. And also the 2021 Fender Player Telecaster with dual humbucker configuration in three-colour sunburst and finished with the decal of Bobby from King of the Hill wearing the devil costume.
Absolutely delicious.
I'd rather ram condemned sausage meat into my ears.
In pursuit of emotional heft, I've added a clip from Henry's appearance on Margaret Cavon Smith's excellent podcast, Crushed.
Oh, my Lord.
In which he describes the tragic end of his first relationship.
I said too much in that recording.
It is my hope that his visceral reaction to being forced to relive this will only improve the listening experience.
Oh, my God, this is going to be absolute torture for me.
I don't know. Let's see.
Oh, my God.
Thanks, Adam.
Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you, bye. We'll be right back.
in a sort of school, slightly lame way. But at the same time, I was just massively in love, hugely in love with her. And then, to the extent that the next holiday, I went to France with my family, and I remember in France looking at the stars and thinking, if you trace that one, it looks a bit like a muscly calf.
You're all right, Henry.
I'm in a very dark place.
But I do recommend Margaret's podcast, Crushed. Henry was a guest.
It's a very good podcast.
Your episode was very funny.
Thanks. I've not revisited it because I spoke from the heart too much, maybe.
I'm going to be visiting that right now.
That'll get out.